Hey, y'all. This is Kate.
Oh, and it's Devin.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
Let's do this.
It's juicy. Devin's a goat.
I was going for more for the sheep vibe, but you know,
the goat, two sound very similar when you're a human being on a podcast
or a lamb, because they're cute and cuddly. You know what I saw the other day?
Also, can you guys tell it's the end of a work day for both of us, and Devin has to go back to work in 4 hours, which I was not aware of.
3 hours and 54 minutes
Fuck
to be exact.
Life,
I'm going
dude,
back
that
to work.
Sucks.
That's all right. It's all right. It's the nature of healthcare, right?
It really is.
I want to tell you what I saw the other day.
Go.
I saw a baby fawn. Well, of course it's a baby because it's a fawn. But like so brand new. Ooh. It had the white spots. Going
so
across the road with its mama. It was the first time I've ever seen one that adorable.
Really?
Oh my God. That little with the spots. Ugh. It warmed my heart. And then I thought of Bambi, and then I wanted to cry and, you know, mom emotions as I'm driving my kids in the car. And I was just like,
that exact cascade of events is exactly what I would expect out of Devin.
Absolutely. I told someone today, I have a new office mate. And ooh. I was like, hey, you know, just an FYI, I tend to sing. I also tend to blurt out sometimes and also become completely inappropriate. And she goes, this is a coworker that I've happened to know all my life. And she goes, I've grown up with you. None of this surprises me. And I was like, oh, thank God. If you hear some squealing.
Oh, yeah. That's our Pod Lab co-host, Sally the Golden Retriever.
She's making her presence known with her dog toy.
I probably should have chosen the non-squeaky tennis ball for her to bring down with her today into the Pod Lab / basement.
Speaking of this Pod Lab, it is so not cool enough for me in here.
I know. This is not,
okay. We're never happy in the basement.
No, it's not okay in this basement. Okay, you guys? It's okay. We need to make that ball go away. This is going to be disruptive.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I had to do it. I had to take the ball away.
She took away her toy.
She's really disappointed.
Mom, give it back.
You have a Kong.
Go play with the Kong. Is there never peanut happy. Butter in it?
Sally's also never happy.
Kate's anyway. In her scrubs, yep. So you've had a long work day.
I'm probably smelly. Sorry about
that. I will then be in scrubs in 3 hours and 51 minutes.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm sorry, Mama.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So I'm really thankful for this podcast because I have not seen you since our last recording.
Which was 2 weeks ago to the day.
That's insane.
I know.
By the way.
I know.
So I've been told a lot by a lot of people today that they were excited that tomorrow is every other Tuesday.
Every other Tuesday.
And then I said, I guess it's a good thing we're recording tonight to not disappoint you tomorrow.
That's so true. We every other Tuesday has been our thing.
It is.
Which
gotta
is great.
It.
We gotta do it.
Gotta do it.
Yeah. So I think we should dive right into it because this one might be a little on the long side, but I'm gonna try to keep it to one part. Because that's what I'm going to try to aim for. We're going to see what happens.
Guess we'll see. I don't have a clue what we're doing.
Cool. As per usual.
What else is new? I mean, I don't even have a clue what I'm doing in life most days.
Oh, yeah, you do. That's not true. So today we're going to be talking about Burke and Hare. Now, these are two young men. So this is very old-timey. I've been wanting to do like a really old-timey one for like a little while.
Older than
Carl Tanzler.
Yeah. Oh, that stuff freaks me out.
Yeah, creep. I know. So this is not, it's got its own like wicked creepy vibe, but great. It's not quite as crazy as that.
Oh boy.
So these are two guys.
This is older than Tans?
Yeah. So this is from 1828.
Oh.
And it's from Edinburgh, Scotland. And so
oh my God.
I totally looked up too. I just posted it on Instagram that
Did
I looked
in the
up.
Castle?
What's that?
Did it happen in the castle?
Oh, no, it did not. There are more than just castles in Scotland.
I know. Which I will know when I get there. Anybody else have big plans when your student loans are paid off?
Scotland, Ireland.
Like, especially your nursing,
Bali
medical,
a floating
student
resort
loans.
Room.
mine is Scotland. Yeah. So I love that you did this.
I know. So welcome to Scotland. It was not an awesome environment around this time, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. Burke and Hare were dubbed the body snatchers for reasons that we will get into.
Dead body snatchers?
Yeah.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Ooh. So you'll notice that records from this time period are pretty incomplete. So you'll notice if I don't have like specific names and specific certain dates for events and I'm giving approximations and like half names for some people, it's because the records are just not available from that time period. So just so you guys know. So before we dive into who Burke and Hare were, we're going to talk a little bit about 19th century anatomy and physiology, because in order to really understand why this crime happened, we need to kind of dive into that a little bit, because it's a really important piece of the puzzle. So in early 19th century, this was a time of real pioneering in the medical field, and particularly in the field of anatomy and physiology. So the subject was actually just being developed into its very own branch of sciences around this time. And there was a lot on the forefront with anatomy in particular. And actually, Edinburgh, Scotland was actually like one of the epicenters of this revolutionary work. Yeah. And because of their efforts and the colleges that they had there and the anatomists that they have there, Edinburgh actually became one of the leading European cities for anatomical study, alongside other cities like Leiden in the Netherlands, and then Padua of Italy were also sort of in that same wheelhouse, but all really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So as the field of anatomical sciences was developing, the demand for fresh cadavers sharply rises.
So that they could study.
Yes, exactly. Because they're starting to develop this as a science type, as like a scientific field of study.
And it's not like people are donating their body
to
science.
How else do you
yet
learn? Exactly. And specifically, it's fresh corpses, right? Because this is 1828 and they had really no means of preservation back then. So they were really at the mercy of people like dying and their families saying, okay, well, yes, you guys can study, you know, my loved one's corpse and dissect it publicly, which like at the time, who wanted to, you know, nobody really wanted to do that. So there was just not enough of these bodies to go around. And when things were like exploding in the field of anatomy, there was like really not much for them to offer. And unfortunately, you know, people die and then a few days later they start to decompose, and then it's like they, you
can't
know,
use it.
Those cadavers are not usable. You know, everything, you know, is not fit for study, like accurate study. So you just can't use them. So that's
I'm
sort
intrigued.
Of, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
So this actually led to the formation of an illicit trade of exhumed cadavers. And students, lecturers, and ancillary staff from medical schools and science programs would even like start to venture into graveyards and
exhumed?
Fucking dig people up out of their graves. Yes, they would do that. So grave robbers started making a living out of digging up corpses and selling them to medical school for like a decent fee.
Stop.
And it started becoming this really competitive business where, you know, they could like shop around and like,
but they're
pick
already
the guy
starting to decompose if they're in the ground.
Well, what they would do is, and I'll get to that, but they dig up like the fresh corpses. Like if somebody had been buried like that day or the day before, they would dig that person up. And probably take some things that belong to them, like nice clothes and jewelry and stuff, and then sell the cadaver.
Stop.
Isn't that insane?
Your funeral was this morning, and I'm digging you up later this evening.
So this gets really interesting. So this was definitely against the law, for one.
No kidding.
Because they did have laws at the time against disturbing a grave. That was like a criminal offense. And taking property from the deceased was also a criminal offense. So this was definitely not legal. This was not like a legal loophole. This was definitely against the law. So by the 1820s, the residents of Edinburgh and other cities had like taken to the streets to protest at the increase in grave robbing. Like, everybody was petrified.
And that, no one really knew why at this point?
No, they knew. I mean, they knew exactly why. Okay. But everybody was
like
protesting.
The public knew that they were grave robbing. Okay.
Exactly. Because, I mean, everything scientifically, like, you know, papers were getting published, books were being written, you know, and you know, the world was looking at this, at these few cities in Europe, because they were on the forefront scientifically and from an anatomical standpoint and, you know, learning these things, and everybody's eye was on them. Mm-hmm. And so they knew exactly why, but they were all petrified that, like, you know, my wife who died yesterday is going to get dug up and sold to some fucking medical school. Wow. So what they started
cremating.
Yeah. Well, no, that wasn't really common practice back then.
I know you're right, but I'm just saying.
But no, you're right. You're absolutely right. That would have been a great solution to all mm-hmm. this. But
we're in
also,
the 1800s.
Everybody being very religious too mm-hmm. in this area. That was like right. not really common practice with right. the parish.
Right.
So they didn't really do that.
Because that's what you did with witches.
Exactly.
You'd burn them. My wife's not a witch. You know, like, we
exactly.
wouldn't do
Why
that.
Would I burn her? She's
can't
not a
talk
witch.
Today.
Well, it's okay. It's all good. It's the end of the day. We're a little crispy. It's all good. So people actually started really watching over, like, bereaved families would use several techniques to, like, deter thieves. So families would, like, sit by their graves and watch over the graves. People
oh my gosh.
Hired guards. They
Could
built...
you imagine, like, being newly widowed,
no.
for example,
and having to fucking just guard there. Your wife's, your wife or husband's grave
for like 72 hours till they were
until
like
they're
not at exactly.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh.
So there were other things they did too. People, like, graveyards would build, like, watchtowers and have, like, armed guards, like, watching over everyone's grave. And some families even purchased these large stone slabs that went over, you know, the entire grave and the surrounding area to be placed for, like, a short period just to prevent people from, like, mm-hmm. digging up the corpse until the body had begun to decay past the point of useful.
It's so crazy. Like, mm-hmm. you're going through probably what is one of the hardest times in your life, saying goodbye to a particular loved one, and you have to worry about them getting thieved.
Well, this was a literal crisis in the area. This was, like, people were, like, marching in the cities. There were protests going on. It was, like, a huge problem. People's bodies getting dug up. What a crazy time.
I'm going to have to, like, find some location in regards to this story when I finally make it to Scotland and, like,
yes.
have to go, like,
You'll
in
have to let
Edinburgh's
me know.
Obviously on the list.
Yeah.
So when I get there, I'm going to go find Burke and Hare's mausoleum or something.
Oh,
and
there's some places you can visit.
Good.
You
Thank
just
you.
Wait. So other families
used... steal them.
I know, right? Well, don't worry. This story is partially like, oh, that's so frustrating, but the other part is, like, so satisfying.
Oh,
how
good.
This ends. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. So you guys just stay tuned. So some families also use what's called a mort safe, which is, like, have you seen pictures of those, like, iron cage things over graves? They're like a big iron
oh, I
cage
think
that
so. Yeah.
I feel like I've seen them too, and I'm going to try to find one and post one when we put
I
up
saw
the episode.
Them in Hocus Pocus.
Oh, God. No, those were the cages that they kept the children in.
Those two.
I love Hocus Pocus, and I'm excited for Hocus Pocus 2, and I hope it doesn't ruin everything.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Yeah, wouldn't that
don't,
be... I
don't
mean,
crush
sequels
my dreams.
Do that, though, so that's why I'm like, I'm suspicious, but it's okay. Moving on. I digress. Okay, so now that we've talked about the body crisis of Edinburgh in the 1820s, we are going to move on to meeting William Burke. So Burke and Hare both had the first name of William, just so you guys know. So they're going to be called Burke and Hare. I'm not going to call them William. So William Burke was born in 1792. So he was one of two sons, and he was born to middle-class parents. And both were decent kids and had a pretty comfortable upbringing. And he joined the British Army as a teenager along with his brother. He did leave the armed forces in 1818 after meeting his first wife, and they settled in County Mayo. And everything I'm finding has county first instead of, like, we say, you know, so-and-so
yeah.
county, but
right.
everything's like county. It's backwards. Europe, you know. We love you guys. So Unfortunately, this marriage was very short, and he actually abandoned his wife and two children after a disagreement with his father-in-law over some land ownership. His way of solving that was just to fuck
leave
off
his
out of there.
Leave his innocent children?
He leaves his wife and children, yes. Fucker. Isn't that terrible? I know. So Burke then flees to Scotland and initially becomes a laborer, where he meets his second wife, Helen McDougall. And he affectionately calls her Nellie. So she goes by Nellie. And the two got married pretty quickly. And they start making a living together by hawking things. Like they would kind of trash pick and find things and then sell them for pennies. And that's sort of how they made their money initially. Mm-hmm. It didn't really prove to be enough to survive, though. And eventually he took up the trade of cobbling. And he was actually pretty successful with that. He did pretty well.
Cobbling, like making shoes?
Like making and repairing shoes. Yeah, yeah, okay. That was like a whole thing. So let's meet William Hare. So records are scarce on William Hare, just so you guys know. So it's unclear the year that he was born, actually. His age and year of birth are unknown. When he was arrested, though, in 1828, he gave his age as 21. But one source states that he was born between 1792 and 1804, and then others state other things, so I'm not 100% sure. Very little is available about his early life and childhood, although it's possible that he lived and worked in Ireland as an agricultural laborer before traveling over to Britain. And he did work, we know that he worked in the Union Canal for 7 years before moving to Edinburgh in the mid-1820s. And that's where he started working as a coal man's assistant. So he was married twice. His first wife actually passed really young, and he subsequently remarried a woman
Anyone
named Margaret.
Rob Hargrave?
No.
Just asking.
No, he wasn't into that yet, Devin. He gets into that later. So accounts of Hare's personality. So this is William number two, William Hare. Notably contain descriptions such as illiterate, uncouth, violent, and quarrelsome. And apparently he had like...
He sounds fun.
Oh, yeah. He sounds like a douchebag. And apparently his face was all marked up from like the fights that he would get in. He would get drunk and get hammered and just fight everybody.
Sounds like a winner.
Yeah, he sounds like a jerk bag. In 1827, Burke and his wife went to Midlothian to work on the harvest. And that's where they met William Hare, who had purchased a multi-tenant home in that area, and he was renting apartments out to people. So Smart. He would have like tenants and make money on their rent. And actually, Burke and his wife, Nellie, moved into Hare's home, and that's how they started getting acquainted.
I was going to wonder how they met.
Yep. So the two became friends real quick, and they very soon earned a reputation for drinking heavily when they were together, partying a little too hard. They would get in trouble. They would break shit. They would, you know, destroy property and just do like, you know, dumbass stuff. Yeah, exactly. So November 1827, Donald, a lodger in Hare's house, so Hare was collecting rent from this guy, Donald, and again, I don't have his last name, dies unexpectedly of dropsy, which apparently is another word for edema. So most likely what he had was like heart failure, kidney failure, liver failure, something like that.
I was watching, I think it was Call the Midwife. And they would talk about dropsy, and based on the symptoms that they had, it would seem like congestive heart failure.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you're filling up with all the
fluid. You swell up everywhere. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that sounds like that's what he had. So unfortunately, when he died, he had owed £4 in back rent to Hare. So Hare was like, you know, kind of bitching to Burke about, well, I lost all this money. This guy owed me money. He was due to get a pension check, and now he's dead.
And now he's dead.
And I'm never going to collect that money. I really
Poor
needed
you.
That money. I know. So this was all, again, in the midst of this cadaver crisis, right? Mm-hmm. So the two jackasses come up with an idea that they are going to sell Donald's body to one of the local anatomists. Great
Try and
idea,
recoup some of that
right?
money.
Yeah. He had just died. So after he was prepared for burial that same day that he passed away, and he was placed in a coffin provided by the local parish, and the coffin was sealed. And then the plan was to do the funeral, you know, in a few days and give him the burial. Mm-hmm. And so the pair removed him from his coffin, refilled it with bark, apparently, to mimic his weight, and then they resealed the coffin for the burial.
Come on.
And
they didn't have open caskets, apparently, then.
No, they did not. Nope. Mm-hmm. So it's
maybe that's why we do it now sometimes, to prove
to
that,
like,
it's that
really
person
make
that's
sure
in there
that's the
no
right.
No one stole them before any services.
Maybe it has something to do with that. I mean, this was such a huge thing back then, and it seems weird to think about because, like, none of us are concerned with, you know, people
getting
stealing our loved
when
ones.
We're dead.
Yeah, exactly. So it's when they were preparing to sell their first corpse that they were introduced to Dr. Robert Knox by a colleague of his. So Robert Knox was a prominent anatomist who had qualified as a doctor back in 1814. And in 1825, he became a fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh. And that's where he started lecturing on anatomy. He actually undertook dissections as frequently as twice a day. And his advertisements for his classes and his program promised, quote, a full demonstration of fresh anatomical subjects, end quote, as part of every course of lectures he delivered. And he stated that his lessons drew over 400 pupils at a time, twice a day. So this guy was, I mean, he was one of the, like, top scientists in the field. He was a big deal. He was incredibly instrumental in the development of anatomy as a science, too. Now, Isabel Ray, who's a biographer from this case, states that he had, quote, built up a formidable reputation as a teacher and a lecturer, and almost single-handedly raised the profile of the study of anatomy in Britain, which, I mean, is so impressive.
Absolutely.
This guy was like it. So the three negotiate pricing and landed on a price of £7.10 per corpse provided. That was actually Knox's offer for this
corpse. Any idea what that's equivalent to?
Yep. Today, that would be the equivalent of £683 or about $812.
Our bodies were worth $812.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
I know. So the pair collected, dropped off the body, split the profits, and according to Burke's official confession later on, as he and Hare, like, left the university, one of Knox's assistants told them that the anatomists would, quote, gladly see them again when they had another corpse to dispose of.
So, nice little side hustle.
Yeah, so
I'm assuming they didn't have any fetal pigs back then.
No, and also the anatomy, they have similar organ structures, but it's, like, just not the same. You know, human anatomy, it's its own little thing. So this started becoming really appealing to them as a means of income because the demand was so high, and it was, like, relatively easy to steal a body. But the problem is, like, you know, when's the next time someone's going to drop dead? Like, we need to do this
and
consistently.
And we know about it.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And we're, like, there saying,
and we're,
hey,
like, right there. I mean, this guy in my house happened to drop dead, and that was great. But, like,
that's not
going to
happen
again.
Every day.
That's not going to happen every day. Exactly. The problem was obviously the shortage of available corpses and how everyone was on such high alert, too, guarding their loved ones' fresh graves. It's not like they could just walk over to the local graveyard and dig up a fresh grave. That was nearly impossible now. So, Burke's wife, Nellie, was in on that and was totally supportive of everything that happens here. And in addition, Hare's wife, Margaret, also knew literally everything. And both were said to have, you know, helped with things and conspired with
the
bear.
They liked that money.
Oh, yeah. They like the coin.
Mm.
Yeah. They want them shillings and pounds, man. Mm. So most sources agree that their first murder occurred in January or February of 1823.
Wait, they killed?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, yeah.
So now they're murdering so that they can have a body.
Yes.
Stop.
I know. I told you this gets juicy. Crazy, right?
Well, everyone's already protecting the pre-dead ones.
What the hell else were
so
they supposed to do? I need a body to
sell. Let's go kill and make our own?
Exactly.
Oh.
Now, most sources agree that the first of their murders occurred in January or February of 1828. And this was either a man named Joseph who was lodging in Hare's multi-tenant home or a local salt seller by the name of Abigail Simpson. most likely Joseph was the first victim, given he was like in such close proximity. He lived in the house and they knew him a little bit.
So both of these people were a victim of them.
Yep.
They just don't know which
they don't
one
know
was
which
first.
One came first. Exactly. Okay. Right. So we'll talk about both, but we're not sure which came first here. So some reports, not all, indicate that Joseph. No, it's okay. Some of the reports indicate that Joseph was actually ill when he died, too. It's said that he had developed a fever and that this further could have motivated the pair to get rid of him, as having a potentially infectious tenant could have been, quote, bad for rental business, too. So that way people are saying maybe that's, you know, why they chose him first, because he wasn't well. So reportedly, a pillow was used. Reportedly, a pillow was used to suffocate Joseph in his sleep. Per some reports from historians, after providing their victim with tons of whiskey, Hare suffocated Joseph while Burke lay across his upper torso to restrict his movement. They again took the corpse to Knox, who this time paid him $10 for the freshness of the corpse.
You mean 10 pounds?
I'm sorry, did I say dollars?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, 10 pounds. Thank you. So
this one's extra fresh. Here's a couple extra pounds.
This was actually a really smart way to go about killing someone at the time. Not to compliment them. It's shitty. But this was actually really smart of them, because the method that they used, the suffocation, was virtually undetectable by their forensic standards. You know, back then they could not medically determine what
that
the cause of death
was.
Exactly. So it was or should have been very noticeable to Knox how fresh these corpses were, and apparently he approved of the freshness, but didn't ask any questions.
I don't think he cared. So back in this time, autopsies were not a thing?
Well, they were just being developed, and they were
probably
actually...
Probably because of these studies of it?
A lot of what this science was... You know, they would do, you know, an autopsy, but it was a lot more limited to what was done now. And because they're not looking at things at a cellular level, really, at this point, you know, this is 1828.
Right.
So, you know, those things like, you know, the capillary changes that we would see in somebody who's suffocated are not going to be available.
Right.
You know, they
can
see the gross stuff, but nothing microscopic.
Right.
So.
Probably out of their research, too, also helped to further develop autopsies into what they are now.
Exactly. I think all of that definitely came from all of this really notable research. So the order of all of these victims are actually unclear, just so everyone knows. So I'm just going to go kind of one at a time, and a timeline that's been somewhat established here. So Abigail Simpson was, you know, either the first or second victim, but we're thinking she was the second. In theory, she was the next victim. So Hare suffocated her as well, while Burke lay over the body to stop the movement and noise, once again using the exact same method of operation. Yeah. So in either February or March of that year, an old woman, quote unquote, and I feel terrible that I have no other identifiers for this victim, but literally some of these victims are like old woman, you know, young man. That's literally the records that we have.
Wow.
So in either February or March of that year, an old woman was invited into the house by Margaret Hare, and she was given enough whiskey to fall asleep. And
the wives are luring them in.
Mm-hmm. They are contributing. Yes, they're awful as
bitches.
Well. We hate all of them. They're bitches. So she gave her enough whiskey to make sure that this lady falls asleep. And when Hare returns that afternoon, he covered the sleeping woman's mouth and nose with a bed tick, which apparently was a stiff mattress cover, and just left her. And so she was just left there to suffocate.
Like a natural suffocation,
yes.
Kind of.
So she was dead by nightfall that night, and Burke joined his companion to transport the corpse to Knox, who paid another 10 pounds. So another event.
It brings me back to the whole, like, saying that we've had in a previous episodes about better fresh, not frozen.
It's so true.
If you bring me a day-old body, you only get, like, seven or eight pounds. If you bring me a fresh one.
A lot more. Exactly. So another event occurred in early April of this year. So Burke had met two women named Mary Patterson and Janet Brown and invited them both back to his place for breakfast. He offered them tons of whiskey, and poor Mary ended up passing out at the table. And now his wife, Nellie, walks in, and she sees him having breakfast with these two little McMuffins, right? And she freaks the hell out, obviously, and literally a fight breaks out between husband and wife, between Burke and Nellie. And she accuses him of having an affair. Janet, that second lady that was there.
She's not helping to lure.
No, she's helping for sure. She's just displeased to find that Burke had taken it upon himself to lure two women under the. And she was like, are you having an affair? Like, apparently that's the line in the sand, and not murdering people is the affair.
You know, yeah, because, I mean, one's totally worse than the other.
Exactly. So she freaks out. A fight breaks out, really only because she's accusing him of having an affair. Janet.
Do you sleep with these women before you kill them?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what she was saying. Janet, that second lady that was there that was not passed out, stands up and she says, listen, lady, I didn't know he was married. I'm leaving. And she left the house. That afternoon,
that
though.
That just saved her life.
Yeah, that afternoon, Burke and Hare murdered Mary Patterson in her sleep. And Burke's wife, Nellie, kept her dress, some of her undergarments, like her petticoat, some jewelry, like just totally took a bunch of shit from her. And then they delivered the corpse to Knox while it was still warm, much to Knox's delight.
These people suck.
How bad do these people suck? They're awful. They're literal scumbags. Hang on, because it does get satisfying.
And
I will tell you.
I hate Knox, too, because... Mm-hmm. They're just feeding his demand.
Exactly.
Bring me more. Bring me more.
Exactly. And, like, you can't tell me. And there's something happens later on where, like, you know he knows what these guys are doing.
Knox?
You fucking know. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, come on. If the body's still warm, how could he not know?
Exactly.
It doesn't take that long for those things to cool down.
Exactly. And now when people are asking Knox, wow, where, you know, all these bodies are coming in. How are these people dying? What he's telling people is that these people all drank themselves to death. Isn't that awful? Mm. What a shitbag. Mm. So the pair most often...
I want to know, maybe you don't know the answer to this. Do these people that are dying, do their families know? Or do they just go missing?
A lot of them just went missing.
Because their deaths are not being reported, right? They're just dying
they're
and
not.
Going to Knox.
Exactly right. Like, these aren't... You know, and what families are being told when the bodies do turn up at these places.
After they're torn to shreds.
Yep, after they're torn to shreds. Is, oh, yeah, we did receive a body, and this person drank themselves to death. Like, I'm sorry.
Then why the fuck are they torn up?
Well, no, I mean, they know that the body ended up there. Hmm. But because there was such a crisis, bodies were just getting, like, stolen and brought to and sold to these medical colleges. It's crazy.
It's been a while in some episodes where I've gotten angry.
I know. It's crazy stuff. Now, the pair most often delivered corpses to Knox inside a large, like, tea travel trunk. So, like, one of those giant trunks, right? Mm-hmm. So, this is rough, but it's another weird little detail. So, Knox apparently stored Mary Patterson, the corpse that he received, that it was still warm. He was so pleased that she was so, quote-unquote, fresh. He stored the corpse in whiskey for 3 months before he finally dissected her.
What?
Yeah, I think he was trying. It was like a means of trying to preserve her corpse.
Did that work?
I have no idea.
Huh.
Isn't that interesting?
God, they use whiskey for a lot of shit.
Whiskey
murder
everywhere. There's just, it's raining whiskey in this story.
Murder and preservation.
Yes.
I feel like that's the title of a book.
At some point in the early to mid-1828 area, a Mrs. Haldane, whom Burke described as a, quote, stout old woman, end quote, lodged at Hare's multi-tenant home. So she was renting a room there. And she became drunk and fell asleep inside one of the stables there. They had horse stables there. And she was subsequently smothered to death and sold to Knox as well. Months later... Her daughter had rented a room from Hare as well, and I don't have her name, I'm sorry. But she and Burke drank together heavily, and he killed her too. And without Hare's assistance, He killed her without hair at all, and her body was actually put into a tea chest and taken to Knox, where Burke was paid $8 for that corpse as well.
Nothing's
so.
Coming out. Like, don't stay at any of these places because you won't come out alive.
It does. Don't worry.
All right.
Yep.
Good.
So, the next murder occurred in May of 1828 when old woman joined the house as a lodger.
And these are all still in Edinburgh?
Edinburgh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy? One evening
I wonder if my husband's heard of this.
He might know.
I don't know.
He's a Scot.
I know.
Yeah. Now, the next murder occurred in May of 1828 when an old woman joined the house as a lodger as well. One evening while she was intoxicated, probably from whiskey.
No kidding.
Burke smothered her. Hare was not present in the house at this time either, and her body was sold to Knox for $10. Wow, I keep wanting to say dollars, and it's not dollars. It's pounds. Mm-hmm. So, another victim was found by Burke too drunk to stand, and she was being helped by a local constable back to her lodgings when Burke offered to take her there himself. The policeman obliged.
Acting like such a gentleman.
Yeah, such a gentleman. The policeman said, yeah, sure, you look like a stand-up fella. And Burke took her back to Hare's house where she was killed, and her corpse raised a further 10 pounds from Knox.
God, they're raking in the dough.
It's awful, isn't it? This is a little rough, you guys, because I'm not sure how old this little boy is, but it sounds like he's young. So Burke and Hare went on to murder two more of his lodgers in June, a woman and her grandson. Now, the grandmother was murdered in her bedroom by the usual method, and Burke and Hare then picked up the young boy and carried him into the same room as his grandmother, where he was also killed with that same method. And Burke had later said that this was the murder that disturbed him the most and really stayed with him, as he was haunted by the recollection of the boy's expression.
Good.
Yeah, I hope he was literally haunted.
I mean, if they're picking him up while he's still alive and bringing him into the grandmother, he's young.
Do you have to be a little boy? I mean, any of these people, you know, all of these people should not have died. But Jesus, I mean, that's hard to swallow.
It's almost like there's no line for them.
There is no line.
I'll take
cheating,
anyone.
Apparently. Adultery is the line in the sand, at least for the women.
Please.
So now in June, at one point, Burke started to grow suspicious that Hare was doing some of this on his own, like we had seen.
And not splitting the proceeds.
Oh,
no.
Exactly.
Jealousy.
He noticed that Hare was like starting to wear some like newer clothes, and he had like some jewelry, and he was buying his wife some stuff, and he's like, how do you have all this money? So a fight broke out after Burke finally went to Knox, and Knox was like, oh yeah, he's been giving me bodies, and nothing that he was involved with. So
trouble in murder paradise.
They didn't speak for a few weeks after that, but they did eventually get back together, and despite their falling out, they started working together, and they were together a bit longer. So in late September or early October, Hare was visiting Burke when Mrs. Ostler, who was a local washerwoman, came to the property to do their laundry. Apparently that was a service back then. And the men enticed her with alcohol, got her drunk, and killed her in their usual way. The corpse was with Knox that same afternoon, and the men received £8 for her. So,
Knox apparently find women a little less valued than the men.
Clearly.
I mean, that was fresh. Why not 10?
I know, right? Jerk. So, next, we have James Wilson. Now, this was an 18-year-old man who walked with a limp because he was born with some deformity in his feet. And he was well known in the area because he lived on the streets and he frequently walked around and he talked to everybody because he was sort of a beggar by trade. You know, he would beg for money
in order
to survive.
I would imagine, like, in that timeline, people noticed someone with a disability.
Oh, of course. You know? Yeah, he was like, and actually he had a nickname it was kind of rude. He was definitely mentally disabled and it was kind of like derogatory. So
right,
I'm not going to say it. I'm going to call him Jamie because that was his name. Jamie. We do know this guy's name. So In November, Hare lured Jamie into his lodgings with the promise of some whiskey, and he sent his wife to go fetch Burke, and the two murderers then led Jamie into a bedroom, the door of which Margaret locked behind them before pushing the key right back under the door. Mm. And as Jamie did not actually like whiskey, he preferred snuff, which was a different grain alcohol from back then. I don't know much about it.
I'd have to Google that one.
Yeah. He actually didn't drink as much whiskey as they were anticipated, and he was able to fight back quite a bit. And the murderers actually said later on that he was actually very strong, and he fought quite a bit, and he was very difficult to overpower, but they did end up killing him in their usual way. Mm. So Wilson's corpse, though, Jamie's corpse, ended up drawing attention at the medical school because the students recognized him from the streets. And they were like, oh, man, I didn't even realize that this guy had died. Was he missing? Aww. And then they started talking and like, no, he was like missing. And nobody really knows, you know, how he died. And
so now they're wondering how his body ended up on the table.
Exactly. So in response to this, Knox makes the very suspicious decision to dissect his body first, right after it was received, and also made sure to remove his head and his feet that had the identifiable deformity.
Don't want anything to, like, say, hey, this is Jamie.
Essentially to make sure that he could not be identified. So you cannot tell me that this guy did not know exactly what the fuck was going on.
Because wouldn't those feet, like... That would help research.
That was an identifying marker.
Right, it was. But, and like, also, you have a known deformity, so, like, let's...
Why wouldn't we study this?
Exactly.
Yes, exactly right. So that's totally suspicious. So, the final victim, killed on October 31st of 1828, was Margaret Doherty. So she was a middle-aged Irish woman, and Burke lured her into the lodging house by claiming that his mother was also a Doherty from the same area of Ireland, and that the pair became drinking together and maybe were related, and they started kind of talking about that. At one point, Burke left Doherty in the company of Nellie. Sorry, I can't think, can't talk. While he went out ostensibly to buy more whiskey, but he actually had to go get hair so that they could kill her together. And the pair murdered...
Can't do it without him.
No, God, no. The pair murdered her by suffocation as well, and the pair stored her body in a pile of straw at the end of the bed in Hare's home. And I couldn't really find why they didn't take her right to Knox for a sale. They actually made the decision to store her in the house, which was what started their downfall. So,
yeah, why would they do that?
Two lodgers there had become a bit nosy and suspicious of about all of these people sort of like showing up at their lodge house,
not leaving,
never leaving, and then never being heard from again. Mm. So, they noticed that that this woman today even had come and not entered and now was nowhere left to be found. And so their names were James and their names were Anne and James Gray, a husband and wife duo. So the Grays, I'm going to call them the Grays.
We like the Grays.
Okay. So they start kind of poking around, and they actually asked Burke and Hare, hey, what happened to that lady that came in here earlier? And they said, well, I don't know. She left, I guess. And they were like, we did not see her leave. So
no, she didn't.
The two guys leave, and the Grays start poking around a little bit. And the Grays go into Burke and Hare's room, and they start poking around, and they find Margaret's body.
No.
In the straw. Yes, they did. And they saw that there was, like, blood and, like, mucus, like, on her face. Like, something bad had obviously, like, happened.
Not suffocated.
She was like, yeah, exactly. So, Nellie walks in and she finds these going
while
through
they're
the
in
home.
There?
Yeah. And so right after they found the body, the Grays were literally headed out the door to like alert police to what they found. But Nellie stopped them and she offered them £10 a week to stay fucking silent.
£10 a week?
Uh-huh.
That's a body a week.
I know. That'd be hard to keep up
with. They didn't
take
the deal.
No, they did not.
Thank
they said,
God.
Fuck you. And they walked out and they went and told the police. Good for them. Go Grays. Great. So the police immediately searched the location. They found Doherty's body. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going back. I'm doing that wrong. So while the Grays left and reported the murder to the police, Nellie tells Burke and Hare what happened, that somebody had found the body, and they immediately remove her body and took it to Knox's.
Okay, so by the time the police get there, there's no
body. The body's gone. Right. Yep. But what they did find was some bloodstained clothing hidden under the bed. Mm-hmm. And they this was really good police work, I feel like, for the time. They immediately, like, separated the two and separated everybody and got separate stories to see, like, if there was anything suspicious. So when questioned, Burke and his wife claimed that Doherty had left the house but gave totally different times for when she departed, and this raised enough suspicion for the police to take them in for formal questioning.
Good.
So early the following morning, the police went to Knox's dissecting rooms and they found Doherty's body. And because they took her to Knox. They went to Knox's and they found her body and they were like, okay, well, obviously this is a thing that's happening.
What brought his connection to Knox?
So, because that would be the logical reason for somebody
because,
to
again,
do this.
They all knew about the grave digging
everybody,
and all
that
stuff.
Was a huge suspicion back then.
I was just curious of the connection.
Yep. So,
you're going down, Knox.
I know, going fucking down. So, James identified her. James Gray, one of the Grays, identified her as the woman that he had seen walking into the house and then never leaving. So on the 3rd of November in 1828, a warrant was issued for the detention of Burke, Hare, and both of their wives. The four suspects were kept apart still, and all of their statements were formally taken, and all of them conflicted. They were all horribly inconsistent, and these guys are actual asshats because they had very, very little planning. Everything was very messy and not very clean. So
I actually think that that makes them less of an asshat because they're not preparing for what if we get caught, what are we going to say?
Yeah, no, you're right.
And
but
to try to work their way around it.
I think that if they're trying to get away with this long term, they would have had like a plan.
So they're half asshats.
Something like that. Only halfway. So when there was a police surgeon, which I'm assuming is like a coroner or a medical examiner, who examined the body, he determined that a probable cause of death would be suffocation, but this could not be medically or definitively proven.
At that time.
So both of them were charged with murder. In total, 16 people were murdered by Burke and Hare.
Oh my God.
Per their own admission. And what they said down the line, too, was that they were, you know, in the throes of alcoholism when they did this. They were almost always very drunk when they did this. I mean, all kinds of excuses.
Lies.
Exactly. So Knox was obviously included in this whole investigation.
Sure as hell hope so.
Ultimately, the testimonies of Burke and Hare exonerated him of any actual wrongdoing, though, and he was described as being, quote, deficient in heart and principle, end quote, but he did not actually break the law. What he didn't do was come forward with critical information about somebody who was actively murdering people, but he had deniability because they could not prove that he knew that.
Bastard.
I know.
So nothing happens to him.
Nothing happens to him. Although we'll get into it. I mean, it does eventually crash and burn for him and create some negative stuff. So police were unsure if they'd be able to get convictions on these guys based on the fact that the method of murder couldn't be medically proven. And as the investigation progressed, police started finding items of clothing that were like in Nellie and Margaret's possession. Like they had dresses and jewelry and shit that they had stolen from these poor people.
Gross.
And that was enough, you know, to motivate people to like really pursue this.
Do you think Burke and Hare knew that suffocation couldn't be proven?
I think they had an idea, which is why they chose to do it that way. If they had brought in a corpse that had been bludgeoned to death, it would have been way more obvious on Knox and for them.
Right. I just also figured they weren't doing the bludgeoned bodies because then it's harder to, would it be harder to research because they're more damaged?
Maybe.
And whatever.
I don't know that these two really give a fuck about that. They just want, yeah, you know,
they
what
also
mean?
Seem stupid to me, which is why yes. I was asking, did they really know that suffocation couldn't be proven?
I don't know if they did or not. I'm assuming they were doing that to leave as little mark as possible on the body and to keep them as intact as possible for the best price. Which is horrible to say, but I think it's true. So, now the families of the victims were able to identify, like, certain dresses and pieces of jewelry and things that were coming out of the investigation that the wives had in their mm-hmm. possession. So they were able to, like, identify a number of victims that way by just their belongings. Now, authorities at this time followed a pretty standard technique by focusing on one of the two to try to get the worst of the two convicted, right? And so they did, but they were nervous about getting an actual conviction without a direct account of what happened. So what they chose to do was offer immunity from prosecution to Hare in order to get Burke, because the theory was that Burke was like the mastermind and the brute behind all of this. And so he was offered immunity from prosecution if he turned King's evidence and provided full details of the murders of Doherty and any other, because he could not be brought to testify, and also because he couldn't be brought to testify against his own wife, she was exempt from prosecution
as
well.
He took the deal.
So he took the deal.
Yeah.
Hare made a full confession of all the deaths, and they decided that they had sufficient evidence to secure a prosecution. So Bastard. They finally moved forward with formal charges against Burke and his wife Margaret for the murders of Mary Patterson, James Wilson, and
Mrs. Hare gets
Doherty.
Off scot-free.
He does, initially. He does, yes. So public awareness of this, like, exploded. And newspapers started releasing crazy details. Some of them were inaccurate. But the opinion was strongly against Knox, and it really demonized Knox, which it should.
Absolutely.
Many in Edinburgh thought that he was a sinister, like, ringmaster who, like, hired Burke and Hare, like, to go out and kill. That wasn't exactly true, but that was, like, the narrative that was going around.
But he ain't telling them to don't come back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. So this, like, blew up, and it was all that Scotland and neighboring countries were talking about at the time. It was, like, an absolute sensation. It was hugely sensationalized. And now a new word actually was coined from the murders. It was called burking, which is to smother a victim or commit an anatomy murder. And they actually came up with, like, a nursery rhyme.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to read it to you right now.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
I am not saying this to my children.
No,
before
don't
bed.
Do that. So, up the close and doon the stair, but and Ben with Burke and Hare, Burke's the butcher, Hare's the thief, Knock's the boy that buys the beef.
No.
Isn't that ridiculous?
No.
Yeah, that was like... people were just, like, singing that in the streets.
That's like the Lizzie Borden one,
yeah,
you know? Like,
it's super disturbing and fucked
on.
Up. Yeah. Yeah. So the trial begins at 10 a.m. on Christmas Eve in 1828 before the High Court of Justiciary in Edinburgh's Parliament House. I'm sorry that I can't. I'm very sorry that I can't talk. This is a problem. So the courtroom was full right before the doors opened at 9 a.m. I mean, a huge crowd gathered right outside the Parliament House. There were hundreds of police officers on duty to prevent disturbances, but there were riots. Infantry and military cavalry were on standby as a further precaution. It was crazy. And in the early afternoon, Burke and his wife pleaded not guilty to the murder of Doherty. And the first witnesses were then called from a list of, like, 55 total witnesses, which included Hare and Knox. Mm. Now, not all the witnesses on the list were called, and Knox, with three of his assistants, avoided being questioned in court, which I can't believe even that happened. But one
I'm
of
hating
Knox,
Knox more
isn't
and
that
more.
Crazy? But one of Knox's assistants, David Patterson, who had been one of the main people that Burke and Hare had dealt with Knox's office, was called, and he did confirm that the pair, like, you know, supplied them with about a million fucking corpses. Mm. So he was able to confirm all that. So, in the early evening of that day, Hare takes the stand to give evidence, and under cross-examination about the murder of Doherty, Hare claimed that Burke had been the sole murderer, and McDougal's wife, mm-hmm. Margaret McDougal, had twice been involved by bringing Doherty back to the house, offering her booze, and had done this many, many times
He's
before.
Probably just gloating. Oh, it was all Burke.
Yeah,
all of him.
Exactly.
Him,
that's
him,
exactly
him.
What's happening. And then the final prosecution witnesses were two medical examiners who both said they suspected foul play, but that there was no forensic evidence to support a suggestion of murder, unfortunately. So they make their closing statements. The jury retreats to consider the verdict on Christmas Day. And they returned only 50 minutes later with a verdict. So they delivered a guilty verdict against Burke for the murder of Doherty. And they had the same charge against his wife, Margaret, but they found her not guilty. They couldn't prove that she was involved in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was. So the judge passed the death sentence against Burke. And the judge told him, quote, "Your body should be publicly dissected and anatomized. Mm-hmm. And I trust that if it is ever customary to preserve skeletons, yours will be preserved in order to that posterity may keep in remembrance your atrocious crimes.
May you not rest in peace.
May you rest in fucking
agony.
Agony, sir." Mm-hmm. So that, I feel like, is pretty iconic of that judge.
Still
and
pissed
I love
about
him.
Hair, though.
Oh, yeah. So Nellie was released when she was found not guilty, but she was later chased out of Edinburgh by an
Good.
Angry mob.
Uh-huh.
So, bye, bitch.
An angry mob.
Bye, Felicia. So, Hare's immunity and all of this garnered a lot of negative public attention, obviously. Mm-hmm. Everybody was, like, in a huge uproar about this.
You
so,
snitched to get off free.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So when early 1829, a petition on behalf of Jamie Wilson's family protesting Hare's immunity started circulating, and Hare and his family were incessantly accosted by angry mobs and ended up fleeing as well to Belfast.
Good.
So bye-bye, Hare and your family.
But he still lives a life in Belfast?
Mm-hmm, somewhere. Fucker. Yeah, nobody really knows. Or I mean, not still, but he did live after that. So this is the super satisfying part. William Burke was hanged on the morning of January 28th, 1829, in front of a crowd of possibly as large as 25,000 people.
Whoa.
Views from windows overlooking the scaffold where he was being hanged were priced ranging from like 5 to 20
whoa
pounds in order for like a seat. It was like an
no
attraction
kidding.
Yeah. And then so he dies, and then on February 1st, Burke's corpse was publicly dissected by Professor Monroe at the
Good.
Anatomy Theater of
no
the university's
way.
Old college.
They were actually able to go
yes,
through with that
and wait
oh.
for it. Police had to be called when a large number of students gathered demanding access to the lecture, for which only a limited number of tickets were sold.
Uh-huh.
But there was a shitload of people that really wanted
of
to
course.
See it. During the procedure, which lasted about 2 hours, Monroe dipped his quill pen into Burke's blood and wrote, "This is written with the blood of William Burke, who was hanged in Edinburgh. This blood was taken from his head."
Where did he write that?
Just, like on a piece of paper or something.
Oh,
yeah.
I want to see that paper.
Burke's skeleton was preserved.
Yeah.
And it was given
oh my
to
God.
The Anatomical Museum of the Edinburgh Medical School, where as of 2022, it remains. It
okay,
is still there.
So that's where I have to go.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
I
told I you
need
there was
to
a place.
Visit. David, are you listening? We are going to the Anatomical Medical Museum to see those bones.
I love it.
Oh, my
Isn't
God.
Great? So.
No shit.
So they actually also made a book that is said to be bound with his tanned skin.
No.
And I found pictures of it.
Yeah.
Post it. And that can be seen at Surgeons Hall Museum in Edinburgh. My dog is barking. Sorry, you guys. So Knox refused to make any public statements about his dealings with Burke and Hare. The common thought, though, in Edinburgh was that he was culpable in all of these offenses, and he was pretty well scathed in the media, though he wasn't prosecuted. There were, like, cartoons and, like, caricatures of him, like, in the papers, like, making him out to be this big monster. And
good.
His career definitely suffered.
Good.
When he did lecture in some neighboring cities just for a while, but then he was eventually removed from the Royal Society of Surgeons and eventually was then barred from lecturing altogether. And he died in 1862.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The murders committed by Burke and Hare raised public awareness of the need for bodies for medical purposes, although that was already awareness that right. was already definitely there, and of the trade that doctors had conducted with grave robbers and murderers, and this had happened more than once. There were other cases of people murdering for profit just to sell bodies to. Unfortunately, there were attempts made to pass some real legislation on the practice, but it failed to make it past the House. So there were attempts, but nothing really came out of it.
So fortunately now we have programs where you can donate your body to science and no one has to dig up your grave and no one has to murder you so that you can do that.
And I'm going to read this because I feel like it's an interesting little excerpt of an assistant who was close to Dr. Knox at the time, who had communicated with the pair for business dealings, later wrote of their deeds, quote, "Our Irish importation have made a great discovery of economics, namely that a wretch who is not worth a farthing while alive becomes a valuable article when knocked on the head and carried to an anatomist, and acting on this principle, have cleared the streets of some of those miserable offcasts of society whom nobody missed because nobody wished to see them again."
Wow. Oh my God.
Right? But that was actually the story of Burke and Hare, the body snatching assholes that murdered 16 people in Edinburgh in 1828. You're welcome.
That was really good.
I know.
I'm satisfied about Burke.
Right? I told you that was satisfying.
Semi-satisfied about Knox.
Definitely not satisfied about Hare.
No, pissed off.
Yeah.
I hope somebody beat him to death with a stick. Belfast.
I hope so too. Like, I jerks. Really hope so.
Okay, everyone. So, if you want to hear more from us, you can look us up on Instagram at MedCrimesPodcast.
Send us a tweeter at MedCrimesPC.
And by tweeter, she means Twitter.
That too.
You can search us on Facebook. Facebook at MedCrimesPodcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can visit www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast.
And along with emailing us your crazy stories,
please
do. If you have any freaky ones or anything that you think could be shared at medcrimes@gmail.com. I was also thinking about something new and just having you send us some questions.
Oh, great. A little I'd love fun, to do a Q&A. We'll answer them all.
Q&A to either do in the episodes or on social medias. Just throw it out there.
Yeah, we want to know your questions and we want to answer them for you.
We're getting all sorts of direct messages on Facebook and Instagram and all
love
the socials.
That. Keep
reviews
them coming,
are great. And everybody's giving us positive feedback, constructive feedback, and telling us stories. We're getting podcast subjects in through there. So yeah, send us a little Q&A.
Please do. We love it.
Until next time, enjoy your every other Tuesday.
Stay safe out there, kids.
Bye.
Bye.